You're listening to the Lean Built Podcast. I'm Jay.
And I'm Andrew. In this podcast, we discuss our manufacturing companies, lean principles,
and the freedom that we're pursuing in life and business.
We're working a lot right now on SOPs, updating a lot of our documentation and documenting a lot of our processes for the first time. And the major place right now where I'm trying to create new documentation is the entire workflow that I use for custom mold development for gun holsters, because that's a unique and specific and very deliberate series of steps and process and how we build those models in order to make them forward compatible, easy to adjust in the future if we need to change them, and to head off the normal development problems we run into. Like, do the steps in this order so you can check and confirm this before you have to check and confirm this. And then once those two things are done, then we only need to adjust this or that to get this part right. There's a very progressive this, then this, then this, then this,
right,
in order to get those to fit well in the minimum number of recuts and test pieces.
Now, is this the work that you do that no one else does?
Okay. Currently, this is work that I do that no one else does. And so what I set up yesterday and started doing was I'm just recording screencast videos, short ones, 2 to 3 minutes a piece, where I take on one particular chunk of the model tree or one particular aspect of the model, and I just rewind my end of part and just step through it at that point and go, okay, I did this. I used the work planes like this. I apply my face draft here. Then I fillet and chamfer these edges for this reason. And then I do this. And once those five pieces are done, this step of the model is done. But if I need to adjust it, I can come back here and just change the offset between these two work planes. And that one critical dimension that I might have to chase in a little bit will adjust, and everything else is dependent on it in such a way that nothing will break. You make that one adjustment, it updates, and you move on.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Those little things are worth their weight in gold, and they've been learned through many, many painful trials and mistakes and recuts.
Oh, sure.
But it was difficult to figure out, like, the thinking about sitting down and trying to type all that up just made my teeth hurt.
So
being able to narrate over it. So I just got myself a little Shure USB mic that I can plug in right there while I'm sitting at my CAD workstation and just be screen recording and talking into the mic and narrating as I go, and then drop those into a shared folder where either Nick or Chris, who are our other two programming machinists, they can take those, and we're going to probably use AI transcription to create a searchable database of that stuff. But then they can turn those and take stills from any one of those videos and then turn them into photos embedded in an SOP. And then we're building out a Gantt chart for all of our product development for holster molds. It'll also cover other things, but it's being developed primarily for holster molds first. So that from the very beginning of, these are the things we have to figure out in the product concept stage. And then here are all of our steps in the actual prototyping and test phase. Here are the points at which the customer will receive physical samples to sign off on. Here's where we start developing the custom packaging, if there's custom packaging involved, and just putting all those steps, because they involve coordination outside our little machining team. And right now, too many of those things are still exclusively in my head. Which means I have to stay on top of those projects every single day. Otherwise, I won't remember that what needs to come next. And that is just, that just needs to get done away with.
We talked about that just yesterday, actually, because we're facing an issue where we're, okay, so there's four of us that are able to respond to technical questions. And when I'm on calls or emails, I go, wow, I've answered this one. And there's actually a video that illustrates this. So what we have is we have a library of, well, our YouTube channel of very dense information. Like, I've done a few videos on different products on top 10 tips. So one video has our the top 10 technical calls. I don't call it that, but it addresses the top 10 issues. And so how does a customer find that before they call us? When we were looking at different CRMs, I ran across a stat, whether it was Zoho or Zendesk or one of those Freshdesk, that they said like something like over 70% of people will opt to search a website for 15 minutes rather than pick up the phone within the first minute. Well, great. That's good for us. The least profitable thing we can do is to be on the phone with a customer answering a question that's already been answered. And so, so how do we find that? And so I told, we hired a new in-house videographer. We've always gone external, very happy with them, but just to accelerate the speed, we're going in-house. And so I was talking to him, hey, as you view our videos, and you're making notes, keep time codes because these need to be chopped up and they just need to be put on our knowledge base, which we're developing that will be public facing pretty soon, so that people can get answers to the questions that they're just looking for that we've already answered, but it's not in our heads, it's in our archive. But unless you have the patience to watch 180 hours of Pearson Workholding content on YouTube, you're not going to run across it.
Yeah. So on that topic, there's a tipping point in educational resources and technical data where if you have none, you have to do everything manually.
Right.
And you start to create some and you create more. It's like, okay, this is working. And then you start to get beyond a point where it's easily searchable and it gets too big.
Yeah.
And then the challenge isn't, do we have something for this? The challenge is, I know we have something for this and I can't find the stupid thing.
Right.
And one of my best friends, John Hauptman from Filster, he and his wife, Sarah, have actually done a really interesting job with this because they have an extraordinary volume of educational resources. Mm-hmm. And they've spent the past year building a closed system AI. It's live on their website. You can talk to him. His name is Phil. Mm-hmm. That is functionally a librarian for all the technical data that they've ever done videos or blog posts on. They've fed it every single blog post they've written. They did transcriptions and then edited them for every YouTube video, every product demo, and fed them all to this thing. And now it's become such an effective tool and can give you back YouTube links with timestamps and do all this stuff that the customer service team in that company uses it as their internal resource to find things.
Yes, exactly. So a new guy on day one could essentially take a phone call and say, give me a second here, search it internally and say, yeah, here's your answer.
Yeah. Watch these two videos start at 2 minutes on this video and 450 on this video. And those both address the specific question you have.
Right. That's amazing.
But the fact that it's customer facing on the website means that in a lot of cases, the customers can start that conversation directly and it can give them the information. And if they decide they really want to talk to a live person instead of talking to the AI, they have the option to port over to CS and send an email. They don't have live customer chat on the site.
Uh-huh.
But it has taken the volume of recurring customer service tickets on frequent questions way down.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. That's good.
Wow. And I'm also tied into that customer service inbox because we're their OEM supplier. Uh-huh. We handle all of their warranty and replacement parts shipments. So I'm actually an agent in their customer service system. Mm-hmm. I see directly the decrease in clutter of frequent flyer questions that have a 2 or 3 sentence answer and a video link to solve them.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelmingly, those are getting effectively handled by the AI and never making it into the customer service inbox.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. You know, speaking of software, so are you familiar when I say the term Pearson boards? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So for those listening, it's basically a grid. So imagine from top to bottom, you have all the different components we make on the left-hand side and our names, like PPS base, MPS base, brake cover, just components. And then the columns from left to right are out of stock, material ordered, saw, op one, op two, anodizing, inspection, assembly, in stock, that type of thing. So the Pearson boards, we kind of use them in-house. And in 2017, John Saunders came out, toured, gave him this picture. And then people were just organically making these Pearson boards. Oh, by the way, we didn't call them Pearson boards. We just called them our process boards in the Business of Machining podcast. John and John named it Pearson boards. Great. I'm going to run with that too. So anyways, some of the comments on our YouTube channels and comments I've gotten for years, hey man, you just need, this is crazy. Why would you have magnets on a board and a huge 2-foot by 3-foot poster from Kinko's or FedEx, you know? Why? Yep. That's crazy. Why don't you just turn it into this giant Excel spreadsheet or something? Well, we did. We actually had custom software developed. But in my videos, I can't remember. Oh, I think I did a shop tour with Kelvin Barrett. I showed it to him. He's like, oh my gosh, it makes sense. He's taking pictures. You can see it in that shop tour video. It's our previous shop. And in that, some of the comments were, you should go digital with this. And my pushback, I think in the video or in the comments was, no, because look, I just showed Kelvin in 1 minute and now he's trained to use it. It's intuitive. It's tactile. It's fine. Computers need logins. They crash. They have subscriptions. You got to buy a server. Well, guess what? Our Pearson boards have gone down and we can't explain them because we had the digital version. We moved into our current facility it was a wasted motion for everyone to walk over and see the board and go back to the machine. So let's put the boards on everyone's computer. We'll give them logins. And so this is exactly why we kind of got it right the first time, is because for some reason, our database keeps getting wiped and our programmer can't figure it out. My other friend that's a programmer, he logged in. He's like, I do not see why. There's nothing. There's no cron jobs. There's nothing going on that would cause a data loss here. But now it's happened. It worked fine for 3 years, but then it went blank about 6 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks ago, it went blank again after we repopulated everything. And there's been nothing changed. It's a DigitalOcean droplet, which is like a mini web server. And so you know what we did? We bought sheets of galvanized steel from McMaster. We printed our old boards. We updated them. We're 3D printing markers with embedded magnets. And now we're back to the tactile analog version of our Pearson boards because software failed us.
Old is new again.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was a good lesson. Just we've gone full circle. Now the question is, where do we locate them in the shop so that they're more centrally located? So I'm thinking of maybe doing some rolling boards or something. So yeah, it's just one of those things that's why the Toyota production system, of course, there's digital forms, but they still use physical Kanban cards. And a physical version, if it works and it's fine, it'll always at least be a fallback to go analog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was our latest.
We've had issues with our ERP because we're processing a lot of mixed sizes of stock out of larger sheets.
Okay.
It's the classic nesting optimization challenge.
Sure.
And it's really hard for an ERP to keep track of material consumption when the yield per sheet changes based on what other similar jobs are being run on the same day.
Sure.
And how we're nesting things, which means that it's never right. Mm-hmm. It can be close, but it's never right. And the only thing I really care about with our sheet goods, I don't really care if we have 120 or 122 sheets on hand. That's not important to me. I need to know when we get down near the numbers where we need to order pallets more.
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
Yep.
And we tried out the idea of a progressive Kanban where it was like, hey, we have a series of labeled laminated tags that are inserted into the pallet every 25 sheets. Mm-hmm. And every time you hit one of these, you just drop it off at the front office and it doesn't trigger a reorder. It just triggers a stock take. Mm-hmm. Like we actually counted the sheets. You just pulled out the tab that's at 75 sheets and dropped it off. I'm going to go check the ERP. It says we have 79. We only have 75. Override, we've got 75. Huh. And that's a way for me to just make sure that data gets cleaned up.
Yeah, that's genius. I love that.
And wow. And for sheet goods, that's a great, great way to do it. It's really simple. Ryan Tierney on the Lean Made Simple podcast interviewed some guys from Toyota. And one of the comments was, you have to earn making something digital. Nothing is digital first. You have to get it to work.
Yeah.
You have to make it reliable and then you can port it over. But if it's not reliable, digitizing it just means it's more unreliable and it's further out of sight.
Right. Yeah. Really quick, speaking of out of sight, one of the things that I didn't like and subsequently no one really liked is when we went digital, you could see only a fraction, like you're looking at the Pearson boards through a window. And now we have four Pearson boards, I can just glance at it and look away and know where my eye needs to look next of what's going on.
Yep.
It's just an instant thing. And so the digital aspect made you look through like a periscope,
like a straw.
Essentially. Yeah, like, essentially.
We've used the analogy of I'm looking at this data through a drinking straw.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a very, very accurate picture of an extremely incomplete shot of the whole situation. I can spend my time and attention on this, but I cannot gauge at all whether this is the place I should be spending my time and attention.
Right, right.
And so using something, the quality of at-a-glance management, a visual dashboard, whether it's analog, digital, physical, whatever.
Right.
The place I interact most with is when I get in my car, I want to be able to see all my critical info all at once. If you had a car where the dashboard only showed you your speedometer or your tachometer or your tire pressure gauges or your fuel gauge mm-hmm. or your media selection, but mm-hmm. only one at a time.
Yes.
It would be insanely stupid.
Right.
Everybody would get in the car and be like, what? In order to change my podcast, I can't look at my speed. I can't right. keep an eye out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah.
Like, this is so dumb. In Suzaki's book, he has a whole chapter on Kanban. We've been going over it in our morning meetings. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was really helpful, I forget if I've mentioned this before in the podcast, was that he emphasizes that Kanbans are very oftentimes physical cards, mm-hmm. but a Kanban is not necessarily a card. Kanban and card are not synonymous. Mm-hmm. And that a Kanban can be a bin, a Kanban can be a rack, a Kanban can be anything where the state of that mm-hmm. immediately triggers an action.
Yeah. Well, it translates to signal, Kanban, right. I believe. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. In his book, there was actually a picture of a parts tray that was essentially like a cafeteria rack, the kind mm-hmm. you'd see all the metal trays in. And the trays were numbered. And as employees at that, whatever facility that picture was taken in, as they would take trays of parts out, once they got down to a certain point, a certain number of trays left would trigger making more of the parts and starting to restock trays up to the top of the rack. Mm-hmm. And we have exactly the same thing. We have some subcomponents that we store on cafeteria racks mm-hmm. and going, hey, we could just label these cafeteria racks where it's anytime we're down to this point on the rack, automatically we're going to build more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the problem is, this is the frustration of the digital ERP is, it's not easy for physical Kanbans like that to trigger an action in the ERP. Mm-hmm. And if we want the inventory tracked of all the subcomponents we're building in the ERP, we have to make jobs for them and people have to clock into those jobs and then check in parts and log time.
Yeah.
There's a really efficient, low friction way of saying, hey, if you see that this bin is below the yellow line mm-hmm. at any point, no job, no paperwork, no iPad needed. All the parts for that kit are right there at that station. Just break out another set of 100 bags, bag mm-hmm. 100 of those kits, and refill this up to the green line.
Yeah.
That is absolutely the fastest, lowest friction way of doing that, mm-hmm. but it connects at no point with the ERP system.
Okay, so speaking of low friction, remember, we went from a physical set of Pearson boards to a digital version, which costs thousands of dollars, which introduced potential liability, which came back to bite us. Now we're back to the physical version. But we moved from physical to digital because it caused one of the eight wastes, which is wasted motion. Yep. So one of my guys, I'm pretty sure it was Kyle, came up to me and he said, hey, we're back to the physical boards, but now we're walking back and forth. Can we just put a webcam in front of it and give logins to everyone? Yes. Yes, Kyle. Good job. So what that did,
digitize the physical version.
Exactly. And so what that did is it's a simple off-the-shelf solution that we can just deploy instantly. And it's one of the things that Toyota leans into pretty hard. So the word that I've associated with erroneously is Judoka, which is an aspect of humans and automation working in conjunction with each other. That's an aspect of Judoka. But essentially, we have a human tactile magnet board, and then we have a form of automation, which is a camera that can beam that to any workstation. And so
it's just information distribution.
Exactly. It's the same thing as your dashboard on your car, your TPMS, your oil sensor, your window sensor, all that stuff, your open door sensor. It's brought to that dashboard. Essentially, the cameras are the new dashboard.
That's an interesting idea. I'm writing that down.
Okay. So I want to update you on something.
Yeah.
Remember we talked about the vertical lift modules, the VLMs?
Yeah.
So like total want. I can try and say it's a need. It would be incredible to have it, but definitely a want. So when we were at the show where we saw it, they said, hey, this it was probably a 24-foot module by, I think it was maybe a 10-foot wide trays. It's great. They said, it's about $150,000. Okay, that's a pretty penny. We're going to go to like 18 and a half feet. We're going with 6-foot trays. Instead of 30 inches to 36 inches, we're going with 24-inch depth. And it was much higher than the 150 starting. So it's like the typical trade show kind of bait and switch. Not nefarious in any way. But I think it was, okay, we didn't get sold to it. But so it's a no-go, not because of the price. Well, the price is a factor. But the big thing was the salesman came out and he said, hey, when do you need this thing? And I went, what? Why do people ask this question? Like, I'm hot to buy it. The show is on Wednesday and you're here on Monday. We want to move forward. I said, you tell me, like tomorrow would be great. And he said, okay, we're about like maybe 9-10 months out. So how's October for you?
Oh,
good. So from January to October, like that kills any type of momentum. And I said, well, if that's what it is, I suppose that's what it is. He's like, yeah. And he stands there, he's thinking, he's like, if I can get a crew, we're trying to hire more people. You know the routine. It's hard to get good people. And so that right there, I'm going, if we signed a contract that might say October, it's still hoping, which is not a business strategy, hope that they might get a crew to install it in October. So for me, it's just a no-go at this point. It's squarely back into the want category and not a justifiable need. And yeah. So we'll look at other brands, but at this point, it just killed the thrill of it. And the guys around the shop were going, yes, that would be amazing. High-tech facility, everything we need. We're not walking around. Like we have one guy, Juan. Juan knows where everything is in the shop. If you can't find it, if you're walking around, you go ask Juan. He's like, oh yeah, it's over there on the corner, third shelf down on the right-hand side. Great. Love it. It's the digital Juan. So, you know, we're moving away from that and trying to reconfigure like my mental spend towards legit equipment, which is probably another horizontal. Ideally, maybe a Kitamura because they also came out. So I'm looking at those too. But that's maybe for another podcast.
Yeah. So update on my lathe.
Yes, please.
So the lathe is fully commissioned. It's operational. We had to get that installed, everything set up, and then have the IEMCA bar feeder set up separately.
Yeah.
That was a fascinating process. When they set up yours, did they use essentially what looked like kind of like weed whacker wire, plastic string to do the alignment, or were they doing lasers?
I was not there. For some reason, I thought they used a laser, but.
So I was talking to the tech who was setting ours up, and he basically said, yeah, for a long, long time, we had this very simple manual tensioned string alignment system. And then we went to multi-step laser calibration. And I said, was it better? And he said, well, some customers liked the idea that it was laser calibrated. He said, but there were a lot of additional things that could go wrong. And there was a lot of extra setup and pre-calibration to do before you could then actually calibrate the customer's equipment. And he said, so we've mostly gone back to doing it the analog way. He did all of ours with no laser. It was just all done with tension string.
Wow.
And there is something like there's some kind of magic woo-woo when someone's like, oh, we're doing it with lasers.
Lasers.
But it's totally different when you walk up and they've got this tensioned piece run from the main spindle all the way to the back of the bar feeder. And he can show you exactly how he is aligning it. And it's just like bore sighting a rifle. Like you can laser bore sight a rifle. But even the alignment of your laser cartridge in the chamber of the gun can have an impact on whether or not you're actually on bore center.
Sure.
And so it was kind of funny to me. It was charming. We ended up having some issues, and this is partially because this was not a factory new install. We bought a used machine. It had been installed once. Some various settings and things had been changed. So the tech was starting sort of from an unknown point. And going, okay, I need to, we ended up with some issues where there were certain alarms between the lathe and the bar feeder that just did not want to clear. And we had to go in and mess with a bunch of settings and finally got it done. It took an extra day. But the physical alignment process, as soon as I saw what he was doing, immediately it made sense. I'm like, okay, you can look at the parallelism across the entire length. You can make sure it's centered in the spindle. Like this makes total sense.
I'm laughing because they also went from a digital solution. Well, they probably went from analog to digital back to analog. They experienced those pains. Wow. So help me understand, because this was an already installed machine and bar feeder, but then when it got to you, it had additional alarms?
I wasn't too closely involved in that process of getting it installed. So I just came over and checked it a few times at various points. I'm not sure what the alarms were. It had something to do with having the bar feeder in auto mode versus manual and sort of bypassing the bar feeder. There was some signal disconnect there where we were getting an alarm on the lathe and it didn't want to run because it wasn't sensing the bar feeder mode being proper. There was something going on.
Right.
So they gradually worked through and got that all figured out, and it works now. And we are actually set up to run our first production outside job on it starting on Monday.
Okay.
Which I'm super excited about. It's not a big job. It's some fairly small steel parts. It's got some O-ring grooves, some chamfered ends, nothing crazy. But it's a great way to get out on the road and start driving it.
Start simple. Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
Okay, so there's two approaches when you have a bar-fed lathe. Mm-hmm. We've done it both ways. When we had our Haas ST30Y, after a part was made in the main, the sub would come in, grab it, part it, go finish it, okay? Then the bar feeder would come in and advance the bar forward in the main and then start to cycle over. Mm-hmm. What we do now, and remember, every cycle, the bar feeder is active. It's pushing.
Yep.
And so now what we do is we bar pull. So
yes, we're going to be bar pulling.
Okay. Yeah. That I feel. Okay. So there's one drawback to that, depending on your workpiece, is if it's a longer piece or if it's aluminum and you bar pull, there can be some rigidity issues there, chatter, right. But we do mostly steels and hardened steels and short aluminum parts. So you're bar pulling.
I think these parts are about 2.75 inches long out of maybe 3/4 inch steel round bar.
Okay.
So they should be easy to bar pull. They'll be nice and stiff to part off at the back.
Yeah. And so, you have a QG system, a Royal Quick Grip?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Yep. That's great.
So I'm really excited to see it run. This is the first machine that we've owned that I do not know how to program. If you said, Andrew, tomorrow you need to program parts on this, I do not know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're going to have a whole new set of documentation being built on the lathe side to start to train me how to run the lathe.
Yeah.
So that's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun to be able to play with a new process and approach it as a novice.
Right. Yeah.
Conceptually, a lot of things are very comprehensible, but the details of how to do dwell codes and how to do spindle handoffs and all these different things, it's just like, well, how do we actually activate the parts ejector? I don't know. I don't do that on a mill.
Right.
Okay. Parts ejector, you mean a face mill?
This is a tongue-in-cheek comment, but one of my proudest business decisions is to never have learned lathes because it forced me to just essentially outsource it to more competent and experienced employees so that I could focus on the bigger entrepreneurial stuff. So yeah, you should have a familiarity with it.
I know how to, power it up and I know how to shut her down.
Oh, we're on the same page. That's great. I'm not sure if I could shut mine down because you have to park the turret in a specific spot.
Yeah. Lathe tooling. We bought the lathe. It came with a variety of tooling, some of which we're going to keep and use and some of which is not quite what we want. So we're going to offload it. But we're planning to go Capto. I think the machine would take Capto C4.
That sounds right. Do you know the BMT? It's BMT something, right? BMT 45?
I think it's 45? BMT 40, 45.
45, yeah. 55, 60. Okay.
It's definitely a 40 series. So BMT 45.
Okay.
I believe.
Then it'd probably be Capto C4. Yeah, you're right.
So in that case, looking at Capto and going, ooh, it's going to be pretty salty to tool up this whole lathe with Capto. At the same time, pulling on Shigeo Shingo's single minute exchange of dies, he is all about setup being settings, not adjustments. Mm-hmm. You get something set, you take it out, you put it back on, it's exactly the same place. We see the same thing a lot in optics, in shooting. Like there are certain kinds of mounting systems that you take them off the rifle and you put them back on and they return to zero.
Right.
And there are other optics mounting systems that do not. You take them off, you put them back on, you're back to square one, you have to resight and recalibrate everything. Mm-hmm. And the QD systems that will reliably return to zero are typically more overbuilt, they have more exact registration surfaces, and they're more expensive.
Yep.
But if you ever have to take it off and then put it back on, and knowing I can just put it right back on and exactly the place it was, it'll lock back in and I'll be right back on target. Mm-hmm. That is so valuable. The ability to touch off a tool, take it out, put it back in and not need to touch it again. Mm-hmm. It seems like an obvious investment in having setups and changeovers on that machine be quick and consistent and having the process reliability that we would not be able to achieve if you had to retouch off and readjust a bunch of tools every time you changed over.
So are you asking if I would approve of Capto C4?
Well, do you have any thoughts on Capto versus other tooling methods?
Okay, so when we bought, I want to say it's the R220 LSYC, which I don't know what they call it now, but it came with a system called Pressy Fit or Pressy Flex, something like that. And it wasn't a Capto system. It was some brand's product name. And so it had like tapered cones that only go one way. It was a lot like a CAT or BT system in a spindle taper. We actually don't use that. We still have a box, a gray box, a blue letter, and I can kind of picture it. It says Pressy something. And we have experienced that we do far fewer changeovers. One of our company mottos is that the best blank is no blank. And that goes to the Elon Musk quote, why are you optimizing something that shouldn't exist? So,
yep.
So the first question is, why are we doing changeovers when we switch parts? And so standardized tooling is huge. What we actually did is we went to, I don't know how deep you've gotten into inserts, but you can find an insert with a coating that is perfect for the material you use. Mm-hmm. There are inserts and coatings that are terrible for the type of material that you're turning.
Yep.
We went with a middle ground. So it's not like you're not driving a Ferrari and you're not driving a 82 Datsun. Okay.
Right.
But you're driving a Camry. And could you get a little faster performance out of it if you went up in a grade or a coating? Yes. But how long does it take to actually switch out an insert, touch it off, and start over? I would probably say that we're probably leaving 5 to 10% of productivity on the table by going with a non-optimal grade or yep. geometry. But we never do part changeovers where the guys are like, okay, we're switching jobs. All we do is we come in with the quick grip collet gun, pull the collet, put the new collet size in, call up the program. We can essentially hit start, cycle start, and make good parts. So yeah, before we even talk about whether you go with a Pressy system or a Capto or some other third party system, I would start with, hey, what can we do to not change inserts at all? That's yep. been our biggest win. So what's yep. it going to cost you for a full Capto system?
I think we're going to be spending ballpark around $25,000 to tool up the whole lathe with the Capto.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a math problem there. Do we spend $25,000 in our first year and then amortize that out over the next? There's some ROI you could calculate yeah. there.
Well, if we had a fully tooled up lathe and mm-hmm. we were looking at ditching all that tooling and replacing it with Capto, I'd be much less interested. I would look at the, let's make some money now and work on our process and then see if there are particular cases where Capto would obviously make an improvement. But in this case, our lathe is not fully tooled up. We have to buy something.
Right.
And we can either buy a solution that we don't want long-term or just uh-huh. say, you know what, let's make the investment. I don't think we're buying boondoggles. I don't look at right. Capto and say, hey, this is totally all sizzle and no steak.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly workable.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We're still pricing it out. I don't know if what I want to do is for a few key things that we know we want Capto for, get those first.
Sure.
And see how we like it. And then we can gradually add more or less as we go forward. When you buy a new machine and they give you a tooling package,
uh-huh.
all that stuff always drives me crazy because so often it's like, okay, yes, great tooling package, awesome discounts on the most expensive version of things I may occasionally use.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you're also held captive to that brand.
Yeah. You know what I want my next tooling certificate to be? Hey, here's a $5,000 credit toward any brand of 3/8 inch flat end mills you want.
Totally. Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. 3/8 flat end mills, any length of cut, any number of flutes, any coating, any brand.
We'll any just distributor.
$5,000 yep. bucks worth of 3/8 end mills for you.
Yep.
Over in the tooling service, it's good for the next 2 years.
Yeah, right.
Awesome.
Right.
Awesome. I would be into that 100%.
Hey, let me ask you this, because this might be a solution. Is it a half indexing turret?
I believe so.
Okay. Because if it is, that's a huge win. I would look at that tooling. So you hold a steel stick. I'm talking about like a CNMG typical roughing insert, your heavy duty hogger. And so if you have half indexing, you can index the top one will be, it will always have a steel insert. And then the lower half index would be an aluminum insert, and then they're the right fit for both. That might be something to look into.
Yeah. I am taking notes and we'll look into it.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we've covered a lot. I have another Zoom call I actually have to hop on fairly soon.
Sure thing.
But good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise.
And have a great rest of the day Saturday.
All right. See you, Andrew.